Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Thursday, May 24th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal today to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. We have a spectacular Audio Stash for you here today, a brand new exclusive interview with presidential candidate and Republican Congressman Ron Paul. Also in the show today, we've got some great pod-safe music, along with some event audio from New Jersey's medical marijuana rally on the steps of the Trenton State House on Tuesday. Right now, let's get to our daily news from Normal. Our news today from Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano. Medical marijuana legislation clears the Connecticut House. Connecticut House Bill 6715, which seeks to make Connecticut the 13th state to legalize the medical use of marijuana since 1996, was approved by the Connecticut House of Representatives yesterday by a vote of 89 to 58. The vote followed more than 6 hours of debate, during which lawmakers shared personal stories about the pain and suffering friends and family members had endured from chronic or terminal illnesses. Quote, "Today we have the opportunity to give relief to Connecticut residents who are sick, who are dying, who are wasting away," close quote, said State Representative Penny Bacchioli, a Republican from Summers. Bacchioli admitted buying marijuana when her husband was dying of bone cancer several years ago. She continued, quote, "This bill is about our choice, our right, and our responsibility to say we no longer choose to arrest sick people," close quote. The measure will now go before the state Senate for consideration. If approved by the legislature, HB 6715 would allow authorized patients with a variety of medical conditions under a physician's supervision to possess up to 1 ounce of cannabis and or 4 marijuana plants for therapeutic purposes. It is not certain whether the Senate will debate the issue before the adjournment of the 2007 session. Connecticut Governor Jody Rell has also expressed concerns about the bill's language. More information and full text of the bill are available at the Take Action Center at normal.org. We have links on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. To Today, here on the Audio Stash, we're going to get the chance to speak with one of the candidates for U.S. President, Republican Ron Paul of Texas. Congressman Paul interviewed with us here in January, and he's currently a co-sponsor of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. Congressman Paul has been particularly outspoken in his support for an end to the drug war. He supports medical marijuana, and he also supports an adult's right to choose their recreation, including smoking marijuana. You can hear Congressman Paul's January interview on the Audio Stash in our archive in the guest interviews section. We caught up with Congressman Paul during a busy week in Washington on Tuesday. Good afternoon, Congressman Paul. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Good to be with you.
And thank you again for taking time to speak with us today, Congressman. First, let's talk about a piece of federal legislation you're co-sponsoring, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. This bill has bipartisan support in Congress. You know, why do you think hemp is a good solution for us right now?
Well, you know, I approach this wanting to allow people to do what they want with their lives and with the economy. So it's a freedom issue with me, and it's senseless to prohibit the cultivation and the use of hemp. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It seems to me to be a hysterical reaction and an overreaction to the war on drugs. So I'm all for providing an economic alternative to some of the things that we need. Who knows? Some people even say that hemp can make ethanol better than corn, and here we are prohibiting it from being used. So I'm for the market determining these things and not the government. I just assume the government just stay out of it completely.
So the biofuels issue, that's something that's made hemp farming more poignant today.
Right, and it sort of helps us, and yet, you know, I think the narrow arguments are very, very important, and it sort of alerts people to the subject. But the larger issue is how do problems and solutions get solved? Is it with government regulation and prohibitions and subsidies? And too often in Washington, things like in energy, they're either totally subsidized and controlled by government and the special interest, or they're totally prohibited. And my view of what the government should be doing is providing a free environment for the markets to work and individuals to make their own free choices. So I think that's what we forget, and that's what I like to emphasize. But when the narrow argument of, you know, maybe hemp is useful, you know, maybe we could have jobs and maybe we could, you know, keep some jobs from going overseas, I think these are all important arguments, but to me they're secondary to freedom of choice.
And Congressman Paul, you're running for president, so let me ask, if you're in the White House, what changes could be in store at the DEA and the ONDCP? Would there be pressure from you in the Oval Office on the DEA to stop raids in California on medical marijuana dispensaries?
Yeah, and I think you'd have proper authority to do that. You direct the Justice Department on what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing, and I don't subscribe to the overriding of state laws by the federal government, you know, where if the federal government or a directive or a regulation or Congress or a court rules and they make a mistake, you know, it's just so overwhelming. So I think as president, I would just not prosecute. I would recognize and defend it under the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment, you know, that this is not permissible by the president to do this. And likewise on some of these laws, the laws I wouldn't sign into effect, and when it's a clear-cut opportunity, they should be challenged in court and work to get them thrown out, you know, in the best manner possible.
And Congressman, in regards to medical marijuana, we've seen a tremendous amount of science published on the topic. You know, would you, as president, have research done on medical marijuana?
Well, I wouldn't use taxpayers' money to do any research. I would just get the government out of the way and let people do what they want, and the medical profession should do the research necessary. And I think a lot would have been done by now if we'd have just gotten out of the way. But the prohibition is the worst part. But I don't think government studies are necessary. I think that enough people already know of the benefits, and people should be allowed to make their own choices. If they make a mistake, you know, they suffer the consequences. So, but it would be a tremendous incentive if they didn't think the government was there to tell them what is bad and what is good. You know, if it's the government to do the research and say, oh, this is good, it's the same principle as the government making a decision and saying it's bad. So I don't particularly want them to do either one. I want the burden of decision making be placed on the individuals and the communities and the parents and if anything, local government at the very most. But I don't think that studies to find out what's good or bad about any substance is a proper role for the federal government.
And Congressman Paul is someone who's been an outspoken critic of the drug war and our current foreign policy decisions. You know, how much does domestic prohibition play into our foreign policy, do you think, you know, when it comes to military resources and the like?
Well, I think it's significant, but it's probably a mixed bag. You know, it requires a military operation, a lot of expenditures. Just think of what's going on in Colombia. We're talking about billions of dollars. But quite frankly, I think that is probably a cop-out. I don't think that's the real issue, though that's what they claim. I think that's the excuse for going in. The drug war is the excuse to go into certain areas for the benefit of maybe oil interests or something else. Same way in Afghanistan, you know, we're over there to get rid of the Taliban and stop these drugs from coming, but maybe it could have more to do with a gas pipeline going through Afghanistan than anything else. But I think they're very much aware of how much money is in the drug war, how much is involved, and I think many governments, including our own CIA, see some benefit to raise money outside the normal circles. And I think the Iran-Contra affair indicated pretty strongly that our CIA was involved in actually using some of this money, drug money. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do this deliberately. But the massive number of people in the country, the voters and the politicians here in Washington, all are easily intimidated, and they easily believe, well, it's the government's responsibility. We have to protect children. We have to protect people against bad things. And they vote that way because they think they're helping, or even if they are convinced it's not helping, they're convinced they better because they think that they can't possibly ever be elected or reelected to government if they tell the truth about the drug war. And yet that's one thing that I've been able to overcome, at least up until now. You know, in my district, they know where I stand, and I've always been very clear that the drug war is a lot worse than the drugs themselves. Yet I've also had to convince the people in my district that I don't like drugs. I don't like illegal drugs. I don't even like most legal drugs, and point out that governments too often, and doctors, the medical profession, encourages overuse of prescription drugs, and here we now have our federal government doing mandatory mental health testing for every kid in school, and when they do some studies on this, they find out that about 10% of the kids are getting put on these drugs, and I think the evidence is strong that many kids on these drugs end up, you know, participating in violent acts. So this is what the government does with drugs with all their good intentions. I think too often they end up doing a great deal of harm in the area which is called legal.
Now, many seek to treat medical marijuana out there as a nonprofit industry. That's the plan in New Mexico, and what's in place in Oregon. Many are calling for that to be the case in California. But, you know, is medical marijuana as nonprofit, you know, could that indicate that all medicine in America could be nonprofit as well?
I wouldn't think so. The fact that marijuana is so prevalent, or could be or would be so prevalent, there probably wouldn't be any profit in it. So I think it would just become pretty well available to individuals that wanted to use it. But to use that as a way to talk about nonprofit medicine, no, people have to get paid for their services, and there has to be a pricing mechanism. Otherwise, nobody knows you know, how much services to provide or how many doctors to have. So the market has to work in pricing any service or any item. If you get rid of that, you invite a lot of problems. So a nonprofit approach to any medication, I think, is doomed to fail.
Now, that's very interesting, Congressman Paul, especially coming from your background as a medical doctor. Now, Congressman, we see that there is a stark racial disparity to prohibition enforcement in this country. You know, over 60% of U.S. counties arrest more people of color for marijuana alone. and some places even have more striking disparities like New York City and New York State. But do you think we've reached a point here where prohibition policy is simply a racist policy?
Well, I think it's turned into that, but I think it's always been a civil rights issue. It's your right to make your own choice about your life, and you make a bad choice, you have to suffer the consequences. So it's part of the mentality that the government is our protector. So some liberals who don't like these laws against marijuana subscribe to laws that are, you know, they provide the economic safety net, and therefore the government is assumed to be their protector in economic sense. Well, why wouldn't it be logical to go to the next step and say, well, they're to protect us in a physical sense from what we eat and drink and smoke? And, of course, this is the same mentality that leads to the runaway legislation after 9/11. But it's not a brand new idea. It started with economics and then on personal liberties and now on physical safety after 9/11. And but I don't subscribe to that. I don't think the federal government should be a nanny state. But I think to win this fight, I think we all should be more consistent in arguing getting rid of the nanny state in all three areas, not just because one would lose credibility if they say, well, we want freedom of choice, you know, on the drugs we take, but nothing else. We don't want true freedom of choice in economic policy, and we don't want true freedom of choice, you know, when it comes to physical safety and security. So I think the principle has to be that the government is there to provide freedom, and freedom of choice and responsibilities fall on us in all the areas.
Now, Congressman, in your presidential run, the online polling following the MSNBC and Politico.com debate overwhelmingly declared you the winner of that debate. You know, let me ask here, you know, during our podcast, how much you think the internet and online media are perhaps beginning to affect politics?
Well, you know, a lot of news these days first starts on the internet, and then the internet or the major media monitor the internet, and then sometimes that, you know, goes on and becomes mainstream in conventional media. And I think that's what's happening in the political sense, that we're getting tremendous attention on the internet, and lo and behold, now we're getting a lot of major calls from major news network, you know, much more so than I ever got before. So I think it plays significantly. I don't think that you can totally win a campaign that way, only on the internet, but it sure can get attention of the major media, and you can raise a lot of money. You can find supporters and volunteers. It's very, very big, much bigger now than it was even 4 years ago.
You've also been speaking about online freedom. You know, let me ask, are you a frequent internet user? How much are you online?
I constantly use it. It's my method of doing research and reading and finding public opinions, and I think it's fantastic. And also, I think what helps me on that is I am known for the greatest champion of keeping the internet totally free of government manipulation, which if you're in a conservative district like I am, it's a mixed bag because people are afraid you allow things on the internet that, you know, are taboo and they don't like, and in things that I wouldn't even endorse. But once again, I put the responsibility back on the individual and on the parents to monitor this and using the use of technology if there are things on the internet they don't like. But I don't want to tax the internet, and I don't want to ever regulate it. And when they did any surveys on voting patterns, I won that survey by a lot, that I'm the strongest defender of the internet. And I think young people are very much aware of that, and they like that position. For instance, I think one of the silliest things for people to do is lose money in gambling. Yet I'm a champion of allowing you to make up your own mind just on what you smoke and drink. I think you should make up your own mind about whether you want to gamble or not, and if you lose money, you better not come crying to the government and say, oh, you know, I'm poor now. Will you take care of me? I lost my shirt gambling on the internet. So freedom is great, but it does presume that individuals will assume responsibility for themselves, and that's the key to it.
Well, Congressman Paul, I know you're having a busy day there in Washington, D.C. I want to thank you again for taking time to speak with us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Congressman Ron Paul represents the 14th District in Texas. He's running for the nomination of the Republican Party to run for President of the United States. We have links to his website on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Next up on the Audio Stash today, we have some event audio from Trenton, New Jersey. On Monday's Audio Stash, we had a special highlighting the march of Jim Miller with his wife Cheryl's wheelchair across the width of the state of New Jersey. The march took place to raise awareness for New Jersey's medical marijuana legislation, SB 88. Jim arrived in Trenton on Tuesday. Here's audio from his arrival and speeches on the steps of the New Jersey State House in Trenton.
And once again, I'm Ken Walsky, Executive Director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey. Mission of our organization is to bring about safe and legal access to medical marijuana for New Jersey patients who are under a doctor's care. We believe no one should suffer needlessly and no one should go to jail for following the advice of a physician. We're welcoming Jim Miller and members of the Libertarian Party who walked across New Jersey today and in support of medical marijuana and to bring attention to the issue for patients who are suffering needlessly here in New Jersey. I'd like to read an open letter that I wrote to the Senate, New Jersey Senate Health Committee in December of 2006 regarding the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. That's Bill S-88 and A-933. It's currently stuck in the Assembly and the Senate Health Committees. Attached to this letter are over 350 signatures of New Jersey citizens who support the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act, S-88. These signatures were collected in just a few hours at recent community events like the Lawrence Community Day, Hamilton September Fest, and Freehold Walk for Life. Passersby noted the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey table and stopped to sign their names and addresses. CMMNJ has found great support for medical marijuana among nearly all members of the community, from public officials to private citizens. These signatures also mirror the opinion of 86% of the New Jersey voting public, who agree that seriously ill patients should have access to marijuana for medical purposes if a physician recommends it. Thank you, sir. CMMNJ is sure you'll agree that the typical New Jersey voter is a compassionate person who does not want anyone to suffer needlessly. Voters recognize that marijuana is an effective therapeutic agent and can be recommended safely by a licensed physician. Additionally, the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services will administer the program, as outlined in the bill S-88. As Executive Director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey, I'm asking you, on behalf of New Jersey's voters and suffering patients, to support medical marijuana and to have formal public hearings on the issue as soon as possible. Now is the time to act on behalf of patients, families, and caregivers in New Jersey. If you need more information or have other concerns, visit our website at www.cmmnj.org or let me know personally at ohamkrw@aol.com. Thank you. The Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey Incorporated is an all-volunteer, nonprofit educational organization. We depend on public donations for funding. Our corporate headquarters are located at 844 Spruce Street in Trenton, New Jersey. Actually, 12 states have already passed medical marijuana laws and have medical marijuana programs in effect. The closest one is Rhode Island. Then there is Vermont and Maine, Montana. New Mexico just passed one. Nevada, Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and Hawaii. A number of states have bills in their legislature, as New Jersey has the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act in its legislature. States like Connecticut, Illinois, New York State, and about a dozen total states are also considering medical marijuana. Now I'd like to introduce Jim Miller, whose wife Cheryl Miller was diagnosed with chronic progressive multiple sclerosis in 1971. Cheryl tried all the medications that were prescribed for her, but many had such harmful side effects and were so toxic to her liver that she had to stop using them. Eventually, she and her husband Jim heard that marijuana might ease some of the symptoms, and they decided she should try it and give it a try. As Cheryl had never smoked marijuana in her life, her MS made inhaling smoke intolerable. Jim added cannabis to salad dressing so she could eat it. They were amazed at how Cheryl's normally stiff as a board body became relaxed and pliant. They became believers that cannabis was the best medicine for pain, muscle stiffness, and spasms. Cheryl Miller died on June 7, 2003 from pneumonia and other MS-related complications. She was 57 years old. As a tribute to Cheryl and her advocacy, her friends and supporters created the Cheryl Miller Memorial Project to continue her legacy. On September 22nd and 23rd, 2003, medical marijuana patients and advocates went to Washington, D.C. to stage a candlelight vigil and a day of congressional office visits to educate representatives about the realities that patients face every day. Jim wrote the following tribute to his wife and best friend. Cheryl made her life an open book so others could have a better life. She was never afraid of the consequences of what we did to help fight medical marijuana prohibition. Cheryl's logic was this. There was nothing that law enforcement or the judicial system could do to her that was worse than what MS was doing to her. It would not last the lifetime that MS would last. She saw that her power to be an example increased proportionately with the level of her disability. By the time she could no longer move her arms and legs, Cheryl decided that it was time to go on an offensive in Washington, D.C. Jim Miller continues the fight in Cheryl's absence. In September of 2003, he helped start the National Multiple Sclerosis Patients Union to advocate for other MS patients in the hope that they might be spared the hardship that Cheryl suffered. In February of 2003, I met Cheryl Miller for the very first time and only time at the first the initial meeting of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey at the White Dog Cafe in Philadelphia. So we have been an organization. Jim and I co-founded the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in 2003. And after finding out that we'd been working independently for medical marijuana in New Jersey for almost a dozen years each. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Jim Miller to Trenton after pushing the wheelchair for almost 60 miles. And I understand he's pretty sore, and I really want to acknowledge his tremendous physical effort in this.
Well, I wish I could say it's good to be back in Trenton, but it's not. I did push Cheryl's wheelchair here the first time in 1993. Stopped exactly where it is now. We're here in 93 to say people like Cheryl shouldn't be charged with intent to distribute by the level of marijuana she had. We weren't going for state law then. We just didn't want her to go to jail. She came across the state with me in 1995 and stopped right there again. Didn't seem to be anybody listening. 1997, she had me set up her hospital bed right there to do an illegal test, and the state troopers wouldn't arrest her. Every time she came, they just didn't want to know, even if she broke the law here. I told Cheryl 4 days before she died that I couldn't keep this up. I was tired. My wife loved me a lot, and every time I told her I couldn't do something, she'd say, "Oh, honey, you don't have to." 4 days before she died, when I told her, "I'm too tired to go on with medical marijuana without her," I told her that. And she said, "But you have to." The first time she ever said that, she knew she was dying. And she told me I have to do something that I said I couldn't do. How important must it have been to her that I carry on? But it wasn't for her. So why would it be so important for her if she's going to die soon? Why did she tell me I have to do this? Because she knew it wasn't about her. It never was about her, what we did. It was about the people that can't get out. The people that are crying out in pain right now. The people that are throwing up with nothing to help them. The people that are just in so much pain they don't know what to do. And it's not just them. It's their families that can't take care of them. It hurts them. What do you do when somebody in your family has so much pain? It's called breakthrough pain. They wake up at night. Marijuana would help them, but they don't want to get arrested. They can't put their family in position. Their family loves this person, and they know because of them, he's not using marijuana, and he's hurting. Everybody loses. Nobody wins. I'd like to say that this bill in committee could move. And I know that if Cheryl were here, she'd have come here to say it's time to move it.
That was Ken Wolski and Jim Miller of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey. That was event audio from the State House of New Jersey in Trenton. We have links to the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. A big thanks to my friend Rupert Kennedy here in New Jersey for gathering that audio in Trenton this week.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMLAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of NORML is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.